You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. This is episode 162, GTD Meets the Church Office. We welcome you all back to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, brought to you by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. My name is Martin Spriggs. I serve as the Synod's Chief Technology Officer, and joining me as usual, Sally Draper, Synod Technology Trainer, who resides in beautiful, probably snowy, Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. We survived the blizzard. I had my grits this morning, and I'm ready to get things done.
Yeah, get things done. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Did you see the Metrodome? Do they call it the Metrodome anymore?
Whatever. I think they used to until this Sunday, apparently.
Not so much a dome anymore.
It was really something to see that video from the inside as the roof was collapsing. Apparently, it's really gone viral.
Oh, yeah. It was, I think, one of the top videos on YouTube this week. So, So did you get a lot of snow?
We got a lot of snow, yeah. Probably, I don't know. I haven't heard official estimates around here. I'm sure it was over 12 inches. When you try to cut through it with a snowblower in places, it was higher than our knees. So it
was pretty Draper igloo then.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you got some strong, strapping young men to help you with all that snow clearing, I suppose.
We would, except they got snowed in at their grandparents' house, and we were here. So
perfect.
We were without them for about 48 hours because they were stuck a mile away, and we couldn't get to them. So.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, you mentioned at the top of the show we are going to be talking about GTD. Those people that have listened to the podcast for a while know that that stands for Getting Things Done. And that is a system, a productivity system that I use personally and also run some workshops and seminars on, where we kind of work through that whole system, Christian or ministry style. And I enjoy teaching it. And we thought maybe it would be good that we introduce GTD to the church office, church and school office. And we've kind of titled the show GTD Meets the Church Office. And we've got a number of pieces of GTD that we think might be applicable to the workers within the church office, how they can use some of the principles of GTD to be a little bit more productive, because there are, goodness knows, a lot of things to do and keep track of in the church office.
That's right, Martin. I really think this is very timely for office administrators out there as they try to keep up with the multitude of events and meetings and to-do items in the church office. And so taking this personal productivity idea for getting things done, which was done by David Allen. There's a book called Getting Things Done and subsequent books as well. And taking that personal productivity idea and then applying it to the things you need to get done more in an office setting.
Yep. This is not the first time we've talked about it. We've had probably three or four episodes in the past where we've not, probably for a while, I can't remember in recent history, us talking about at least the specifics of the system. But I know that we spent almost an entire show back on, I think we found it in episode 54, that we called The Art of Productivity, where we did do a little bit of a deep dive on getting things done.
Yeah, I think that's when you were getting ready for your first, or maybe had just finished your first winter class at the seminary.
That's right.
And you do a seminar called Mind Like Water, which is a GTD saying or whatever, where your mind is
kind
clear and
themes.
Not consumed with all the tasks and to-do things that can bring you down.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you may want to check out that particular episode if you want to get a little bit more into some of the other details. But there are a couple of basic tenets of getting things done that we're going to pull out here and talk about as it relates to the church and school office. One of them is the concept of next actions. A lot of people think that productivity equals a to-do list and getting as many items checked off the to-do list as possible, whether that be a shopping list or a work list where you've got, or errands list, whatever it is. But the challenge with creating an effective to-do list is being very specific about what items go on there. Too often we create to-do lists that are just general isms, to-do-isms, so to speak, things that we want to be thinking about, but not very specific or concrete. And one of the real important concepts of GTD is that you have a very next action listed on your to-do list, and sometimes broken into multiple to-do lists. So it would be not just fix the car, but if there is a specific next action like call the mechanic, that would be a next action rather than fix the car. Unless you're physically going to go out to the garage with a wrench in hand, then maybe fix the car is okay. But really, it's got to be a very specific next action. So you can look at the list and say, what am I going to do at this very moment to accomplish this particular task or project? And that might be call mechanic or call a member or whatever it is. So you can apply that to your own particular to-do lists.
I think that's a huge step for productivity. Otherwise, those to-dos can just be paralyzing. They can just bring you down. You see them on your list and you say, oh, there's no way I can begin to tackle that because it's just too big. And so you just kind of procrastinate on some of those kind of things.
And if your list is too vague, you have to constantly ask yourself the question, well, what is the first action or what is the very next action? So that's a time waster in and of itself. Determine that once, write that down, then you've got it. So I mentioned lists by context. It's usually a good idea, at least according to this particular system, to create certain lists. So you have a phone list. So these would be the people that you would need to make a phone call to. You have maybe a meeting or agenda list. So things that you need to schedule a meeting for, or people when you see them next, you would want to discuss a particular topic. So what I have for my staff is I have a list for every staff member that I have. So I have a Sally Draper list, for instance, of things that I need to talk with Sally about. You can have an errands list so that when you're out and about, you've got a list right with you that says, well, you need the milk or you need the whatever. You have an email list, so when you have an email client in front of you, you know what you should be doing. So very important concept.
And taking that concept of list and applying it to the church office is really kind of that next step we'd like to take in our discussion today, Martin. Mm-hmm. The church office revolves around list of things to do.
Checklists,
and many of them are calendar associated.
And very repetitive, too, because the church year cycles through every year, right? Christmas comes every year. You have stuff to do around Christmas or Advent or Vacation Bible School or Festival of Friendship, whatever it is.
Exactly. So just that initial step of capturing all of those recurring events and activities. And you know, I say events, the meetings are events. In relation to Advent and church, in our church we have decorating the church basement and decorating the church and getting the trees delivered. And, and on, all of those kind of things, capturing them can just take a load off the next time December rolls around and you have just the list of things to do.
So the point of a list is not just that you have a list, but that you have it in front of you at the appropriate time to do something with it. Our brains are very poor at mapping, the times we need the information to the time at hand where you're actually going to use or do something with it, or you can work off that list and do things on the list. And one of the techniques that is used in GTD to help you create that maybe tickler system is to create something called 43 folders. And here's how it works. So you have 43 physical file folders, and you label them. So you label 12 of them with the months of the year, so January through December, and then you label 31 of them with days of the month, so 1 through 31, so the longer months you can accommodate. And the way you set this up is you have a file cabinet with these 43 folders, and the month that you're in, has the days of the month. So if we are on, let's say, January 1st, so if you want to start this for the new year, your file folder or your file cabinet would look like this. You'd have the January folder at the very front. You've had days 1 through 31 following it, and then February through December following that. So there are your 43 folders, and the way you stack it or the way you put things items into it is if you're in the month that you're in, you can put them on a particular day that you want to be reminded of something. Or if it's down the road, so for instance, I'm not sure when Easter is. Is it in March this year? I assume it is.
No, it isn't.
Lent starts in March, and it's a late Easter. If there are different things that you want to consider in the month of March, so you've got a checklist for Lent, you would put that in the March folder. Then once you hit March, so the first day of March, you look in the March folder, and then you begin to distribute items across that month. So if you've got something that needs to be addressed on March 3rd or March 10th or whatever it is, then you redistribute it, and then you continue cycling through all of those 43 folders so that you've got a little running calendar with all of the checklists that you want to attack at the appropriate time, you know, whether that be the first of the month or later on in the month or however that's going to work best for your particular church or school office.
I think that's an excellent concept for church and school office. Just to begin to document those things is going to just go a long way to improving the efficiency of the office. Now, you certainly can do it in that physical file folder in a file cabinet method, but you could also do that electronically.
Sure.
You could capture those kind of lists and things on an electronic calendar, like a Google Calendar, and make use of the task lists associated with Google Calendar as well. Or you could do them on a website even, maybe dedicating a page of the website to each month and just begin to document all those things, and maybe have a page that's for the recurring monthly activities or the recurring quarterly activities or whatever, so that you just have those lists and are able to reference them as these times of year roll around.
Mm-hmm. So that's a real simple thing. I've seen some churches have a master 43 folders file system that everybody in the church office uses. So if they've got something that other people are going to need to be involved with, so they have a group or community 43 folders, and then still others have each individual person within the church office, whether it be pastor, secretary, staff minister, whatever, have their own 43 folders. And when we talked to our interviewee this week, John Rudot from St. Matthew's in Appleton, he's going to talk a little bit about his system and how this has changed how he does work. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
One more mention before we get off the topic of getting things done in the church office is the concept of a meeting schedule, a regular opportunity to review maybe past events and make notes and additions to your documentation or list, and also to look ahead probably on a rolling basis at the coming 3 months or so. And I think that can be a really effective tool. Martin, you had a book recommendation that kind of went along those lines.
Yeah, and this has been around for a while. I read it a long time ago, in fact, called Death by Meeting, a Leadership Fable about solving the most painful problem in business, which they suggest is meetings. And if you have more than one person in the church office, or obviously churches have meetings, lots of meetings, whether they be board meetings, council meetings, whatever it is, this is a problem. You want to optimize that time. And sometimes meetings just get in the way as opposed to help you get things done. And some of the concepts in that book are very transferable to a ministry setting. Although I don't run a church here in the Synod office, there are many similarities, where with my staff, we have a daily meeting, 10 minutes the morning. We have it at 8:30 every morning, where it's kind of a stand-up meeting. We do it via voiceover IP technology, and it's just real quick. It's what's going on today, do we have any things we need to get in sync on, that kind of thing. And so we're starting the day, we know what's on each other's calendars, we know what we're doing, we know where there's crossover, we can get rid of any inconsistencies across our schedules to make sure that we're all in sync. And then we have a monthly meeting that is a little bit longer. It's a morning meeting, so it takes a couple hours. And that looks back a month and forward a month. So it's very tactical, but it's a little bit longer meeting. We can talk about things that went well, things that we need to address, things that are coming up in the next 30 days. And then finally, we have a quarterly meeting that is all planning. We don't look back at all. We only look ahead. We look out 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. So we're always looking out ahead, saying what's coming up, what needs to get on our calendars, what do we need to be thinking about, how do we get ahead of the curve versus always being in a reactionary mode. And that seems to have worked pretty well for us.
And I think as a church or school office, you might even want to add a meeting maybe on a biannual basis, specifically focused at the event calendar for the church and school, because you've got to be really rigorous about your maintenance of the calendar. You know, when is the service going to be next December for Advent, for Christmas, those kind of things. You can always be looking out and checking and getting those schedules in sync. And so, you know, having some specific focus on your event calendar is probably a good idea as well.
Absolutely. Good stuff. And we could go on and on, but we probably need to move on to our interview, which is also about, at least in a peripheral way, our getting things done, because John Rudat was in one of my Winterim classes and took this very seriously, and he wanted to implement the getting things done strategy. So he did that. This was about a year ago now that he was in that class. And then he's also found some other resources, which he shares in the interview, which have really helped him out in getting things done, getting organized, getting the church office organized, which is one of his responsibilities there at St. Matthew's in Appleton, Wisconsin. So John was good enough to join us. Let's listen in on that conversation that Sally and I had with John. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is John Rudat from St. Matthew's in Appleton, Wisconsin. He's a staff minister there of Administration and Family Ministry. Good afternoon, John. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you again. You were in one of the classes that I taught last winter, I guess it was, at Winterim at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And that's primarily one of the reasons we wanted to have you on, because our focus of the show this week is implementing some of these productivity practices that we talk about in the class within the church and school office. So who better to talk to than somebody who is on the front lines and hopefully made use of some of those tools and concepts that we talked about. But maybe before we jump into kind of the nuts and bolts of getting things done and your experience, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're currently serving, what your responsibilities are, family life, hobbies, that kind of stuff, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. I've been at St. Matthew for 7 years now. Administration and family ministry, well, what does that mean? For administration, it means office management. And for a while there, the main focus also was on financial management. That's been slowly taken off now. Uh-huh. Computer management, computer systems, networking, all the AV equipment for worship, and then also property management with facilities, property and grounds type duties, and I work in partnership with our property deacon. Uh-huh. Family ministry right now is basically helping out with editing and creating material for our underground ministry, which is our ministry to the children on Sunday morning. So, as Pastor Milky likes to say, we killed Sunday school, and we replaced it with a new program that's completely different than the traditional style of Sunday school, and it uses a lot of media.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited to be involved with that.
Why do you call it underground?
Because we meet in the basement of the gym.
I thought it might be location
under the ground.
Yeah, got it. Okay, very, very creative. I like that. Family and things you like to do for fun?
I'm married to Carolyn, my wonderful wife. I have 6 kids from 8th grade all the way down to 4 years old.
Okay. So with six kids, you probably don't have any hobbies, actually.
Yeah, that's probably it. Well, I guess the hobbies, I was thinking about that. It would be that we just moved into a house 2 years ago. So the hobbies were fixing up the house. Mm-hmm. And I guess my true hobby would be that we homeschool, and we're part of a Christian homeschooling group in the Appleton area. So I'm on the board. So I consider that my hobby time. Mm-hmm. To help out on the board, and then I'm also their webmaster for their website.
Sure. Just to give our listeners a little bit of context, what kind of congregation is St. Matthew's? What size is it? What kind of community is it in?
Size is about 1,000 members.
Okay.
With about 315 worshiping on a weekend. Mm-hmm. No school. We did have a school 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Community is about 60,000 people of Appleton and Fox Valley area. Mm-hmm. Lots of Wells churches around.
Sure.
Well, shifting gears then to getting things done, we understand you're quite the aficionado of the getting things done technique, and I'm just curious if your getting things done helps you get things done in the church office and how it might affect your work there at St. Matthew's.
Ever since I took that class with you, Martin, it's totally changed how I get my tasks done. Mm-hmm. It's taken a long time. I'd say just about right before you asked me to be on the show, it was finally where I was like, I finally got it.
Uh-huh. Right? Timing's perfect then.
Yeah, so it was like, okay. So it takes, a lot of effort to get there, but it is well worth it. And yeah, it's definitely making a difference in my life as far personally for getting my work done. But then it's also now spilling over into other areas of the ministry and helping us be more efficient and get more things done in a more timely manner.
Where did you see the biggest change? What were the biggest wins as you saw it?
Changing my office environment. Mm-hmm. And then I emailed you the picture of the before and after. Mm-hmm. Differences there. Just I didn't realize how big of an impact that would be, that the environment that you work in has an effect on you emotionally, which then has effect on you how productive you are.
Right.
So once that was cleaned and cluttered and organized and kept that way, that made a huge impact. And I think the other biggest impact was the cleaning of the mind. Mm-hmm. Where you had talked about in the class, taking your mind and you're trying to be like calm, like a pond of water, and being at that state, getting to that state has just been a tremendous difference, because then I feel so much less stress. So then there's less emotional tension. So then when you sit down and you work on a project, that you're doing it more efficiently and with more clarity. So then your quality goes up as well.
Yeah, I would reiterate what you said about the clean office. Some people think that that's just kind of a nice byproduct of the system. But if you're going to spend any significant amount of time in a workspace and you want to look forward to doing it, and that's part of the deal here, is wanting to do the work, not just having to do it. You want to create an environment that you like coming to. And the environment makes a big difference, down to the comfort of the chair, to the quality of the lighting, to the the height of the monitor, the comfort of the keyboard. All of those things can have a very positive or negative influence. And those of you listeners that are thinking about your office environments, or you manage a staff, so you're working in a church or school office, I think it's really important to pay attention to those little things, because they do somewhat frustrate anybody who has to sit in those environments for long periods of time. And that's a fairly common sense approach, but not a lot of people take the time and make the commitment to do it.
I would think that having that positive environment and that lack of stress is going to flow over into the people that you serve as well. So if someone's coming into your office for counseling or for whatever needs they have within the church office, then they're going to come into a positive environment, and they're going to be dealing with someone who has a positive outlook on things because they don't have 20 phone calls that they're trying to remember to return in the back of their head or whatever. So it's got to be a win-win on a lot of different fronts there. I'm just wondering about also the fact that our teachers, our pastors, our staff ministers are basically like self-employed and self-motivated individuals. They have to set their own agendas and organize their work and prioritize things. So I'm guessing the system helped you in a lot of ways with those kind of things as well.
You are absolutely correct on that. I didn't realize the impact of the getting things done system with the calendaring. Where I finally feel this, you know, like the last month, that I finally trust the system, so that when I look at the system, I see, okay, that's what I need to do today, because it's, I've sat down and I've planned out and I've calendared when I need to do different tasks, so it gets done on time and then also in a timely fashion. And then I know in the back of my mind that I've carved out the time to do it so I can be more relaxed. And the scheduling then is a huge part of the impact, because then everything is scheduled. Your life is more planned and it's less reactive, so you're putting out less fires because you're planning things out ahead of time.
Right.
The fires are still going to come, but you can deal with them easier.
So what are some of the tools? It sounds like you're using some electronic or digital tools to get organized and stay organized and ultimately become more productive. Any that's kind of stick out in your mind that might be worth sharing?
Well, sure. The Things software for Mac and the iPod Touch and Pad, it's made by Culture Code. That's been tremendous.
So what do you use the iTouch for? iPod Touch, or what do we call it, Sally? You've got one.
I call it the iTouch.
Let's call it the iTouch.
What
do you use that for? Is that for task lists and calendar management?
Yep. I use the iTouch as my portable reference whenever I'm in a meeting in a different room,
okay,
other than my office or offsite. You know, that I have that with me, and it's always in sync with what the task list on my computer and online calendar, so then I can, when people ask me questions about when I'm available for meetings or then I can add things to my to-do list, I've got it right there with me. That's how I use it.
Okay.
And this Things, that's kind of a strange name for software, but that's your to-do list, basically. That's how you organize all the things that come across your desk, basically.
Yep.
Okay.
The other key component that I found very useful is not so much technology, but the kind of the old school pen and paper, is the David Allen wallet that has, I think, Martin, you showed us that at the class, where you got your pad of paper right in your wallet and a pen right in your wallet, so that if I happen to forget to take along my iTouch, or I'm on the road, or somewhere else, I can just, you seem to always remember that you have to do something when you're in a spot where you can't do anything about it. Like I was, like today, we had Advent services in the morning, and I run the AV booth, and I was sitting in the AV booth, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to fix the lights that are shining on the manger. Well, I can't do anything about it because service is just about to start, but I can write it down and then come back to it and put it into my system when I process my inbox.
Very good. So what about the winning rub-off for your church office? Are there other people that have Mind Like Water around you, or are they catching on to the trends that you're setting, or what?
They are catching on that I'm doing things differently. Even the members have. Because they come in and they're like, wow, what are you doing? Because your office is always clean now. and then you're right on when you talked about the atmosphere, because I have now more members, I feel, coming in and sitting down and chatting with me than I did before, because it's a more comfortable environment. The it's rubbed off on our office secretary, but she and I work together very closely on a lot of projects. So while she hasn't adopted the system, the getting things done system yet, she has changed her habits to look at the calendar more frequently, because we're putting things on the calendar, like when I'm in the office and when projects are due, or we're especially the bulletin, which is a publication that we know we have to do every week. So she and I sat down and put down the deadlines for each step of the way, when it needs to be done by, and put that on the calendar so we can see that and then measure our progress by that. Mm-hmm. I've been working with our property deacon, and the system kind of overflows into that area, and because we've now developed systems for how do we, when somebody knows there's a light bulb out somewhere in the building, how do we make sure that it gets done by the volunteers? Well, now we have a system, and we went around the building, and we put out little forms for every room so that people can fill them out and submit them, and there's a little box by the office, and they can drop it off, and today I got two of them. So then I process that and get it on the volunteer list, and the volunteers come, and they open up their binder, and they check their list, and they see what needs to be done. So those are the two areas where it's starting to rub off.
So, John, I was looking at your before and after picture, and you have a big board next to your desk there behind your computer.
Yep.
That says Intentional Leadership Board. Now, that's not something that we talked about in our class. What is that?
That is the board that I look at every morning to remember who I am, how God has created me, where I'm going, and what I need to do.
Okay, so these are your horizons of focus, basically.
Yeah, and that was really, I guess that would be another primary one of my helps or recommendations for people would be that Synergy Strategies. That's run by Christy Geiger. She's a Wells member, and she does business coaching for business leaders. And she helped me take everything I learned from the Getting Things Done system and the Mind Like Water class and helped me to say, okay, now how are you going to take that and how are you going to put that in your life and make it happen? She helped me walk through that, and part of that process was making this board. So when I sit down and I look at the board, I have a statement of who I am. I'm valuable to God because of Him, and a bunch of other statements to remind me that I'm forgiven, accepted, and beloved of God, etc. It has what my values are, what my strengths are, where my vision is, where I want to be, where I want to be an intentional, disciplined leader. I want to enjoy our family. I want to enjoy my ministry. And then it gets down kind of, that's like the way up in the clouds level.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get down a little bit closer. What's my bio passage that I'm reminding myself every day this week? What are my, in the coaching, we talked about how there are things that I love to do, and those are what I call my jet plane things, where I feel like I'm soaring, I'm having a blast, I love it. And then there's the drone things, the boring things, the things that need to get done, the filing, the cleaning of the desk to keep it uncluttered, and those types of things that I don't really like to do, but I need to do. And so she talked about how those drone things are like the runway that support the jet plane, and so you have to balance that. Okay, if I want to have the fun things, if I want to do the things that are fueling from my passion and my strengths, then I also have to do the drone things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get down to okay, what are those specific drone things? What are those specific habits that I have to do every day? And those, part of those specific habits are the getting things done system, you know, clearing my mind, reviewing the calendar, emptying and processing the inbox, and filing things away. And then there's the tasks that need to be done for the day. And then there's the during my lunchtime is when I take the time to do the fun things, like reading the magazine articles for professional growth or browsing the web or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So that's my little fun break there is during lunch. And then after lunch, it's focusing on the more projects that take like a chunk of time to do, and then wrap up for the day and review what happened and pack up and then head home.
Sounds great. In closing, we got to wrap up here pretty quick. One final question: Where do you see yourself going from here? What's next? Where do you see some room for improvement yet that you haven't had time to truly grab a hold of and improve?
Well, my wife, you know, has seen what I've done and sees the change in me with the attitude and the environment in the workplace, and she wants that at home. So now we're challenging now. How do you take this kind of a system and apply it to home so that the home projects and the home tasks can be done in an orderly and productive way? The other thing at work then would be to take the process that I learned from getting things done and use that for better communication with the staff, better scheduling for one another, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe eventually we'll get one of the other staff members to get on board with the getting things done system, but it'll take some time before we get that far.
Right. Well, one at a time. And the one is yourself at this point.
Right.
So
yeah, right.
That's awesome. John, thank you so much for taking the time with us. We really enjoyed the insights, and I think this is pretty inspirational to anybody thinking about the long haul that might be getting more productive and getting more stuff done. So thanks for taking the time with us.
You're welcome.
Sally, I love getting feedback from people who have gone through that class and had some success, and just based on the before and after pictures that John provided, I'm really excited for John.
Yeah, I think these pictures are just golden. I can't wait for our listeners to see his desk before and after. I guess I would be kind of ashamed to show mine, my before picture, which is what I'm living right now. But yeah. I'm determined to improve things based on what I see John's done.
Yep. Oh, good for you, John, and thanks for joining us. Really appreciated that. Enjoyed the conversation. Really good. Blessings on your work there in St. Matthew's in Appleton. Shall we move on to ministry resources?
Yeah, I'm excited that we have a couple of one-year Bible options to share with our listeners.
Now is the time to be thinking, you know, through the Bible in one-year kinds of plans.
Yeah, and apparently you guys are starting one there at Peace Hartford you're going to share.
I serve as the chairman of our Board of Adult Discipleship, and one program that we wanted to get going this year was to challenge our members to get through the Bible in 1 year, to read through the entire Bible. What better way to push the adult discipleship agenda and make disciples and get people active is to get them into God's Word, and that's what we decided to do. So we made one-year Bibles available for basically our cost, so we bought them in bulk, and we could get it down to about $10 a Bible. And we're using the NIV, and this particular Bible has four readings per day. It has an Old Testament reading, New Testament reading, a proverb, and a psalm. And the response has been really, really positive. I've been excited about how many people have come up to us and said, hey, this is a wonderful idea. I just didn't know where to start. And so here is a Bible that's divvied up into 365 readings. And we're going to use Facebook, we're going to use Google Groups, we're going to use a bunch of different tools to try and keep people on the wagon and get people through the Bible in 1 year.
We also heard from a coworker of ours at the Senate Administration Building that he started a brand new blog. It's called the Daily Bible Challenge, and this is done by Adam Gady. And he is encouraging everyone to take up the challenge of reading through the Daily Bible, which is a published Bible that's in chronological order. Mm-hmm. So it has 365 daily readings, arranged slightly different than the one that you're using,
right,
Mark. Where you actually go chronologically through the books that are in the Bible. Mm-hmm. But he set up this blog and is encouraging people to take up this challenge. He has some really great, you know, kind of background information and why read the Bible and why this particular Bible, why did he choose that? Mm-hmm. But he basically said he's read the Bible through in the past, and it's been a huge blessing to him. And this is a worthy challenge that he's inviting the world to participate in by having this blog out here.
Yep.
So check out Adam's blog, and if you're interested in going along with the Daily Bible Challenge, there's an option for you there as well.
That's awesome, and I hope he gets a lot of people going with him there. DailyBibleChallenge.blogspot.com, and you see all the stuff you'll need there, and I'm sure that blog will become active as there's conversations wrapped around those daily Bible readings in chronological order, so you can kind of work through the Bible as best as we can figure out how it was written and in the chronological order it was written in.
You know, and kudos to Adam and to any of our lay people that are out there listening, because Adam is using technology to spread God's word, and that's just really encouraging to see, and also a good model for anyone who's listening today.
Yeah, maybe we'll have Adam on the show, you know, a little bit later in the year to see how things are going and if everybody is enjoying the ride.
Sounds like a great idea.
Let's move on to news and tech, Sally.
Yeah, we had some news from our friends at Google. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Google, for keeping us up to date with news.
There's never a shortage of news coming out
of
Google.
Never a shortage. They announced an update to the Chrome browser and also the opening of the web store, mm-hmm. which will ultimately feed the Chrome operating system.
Right.
Now, they've talked before about their development of this Chrome operating system, which will be totally internet-based. There will be no hard drive needed because there will be no local applications on the computer that you're using to access the internet. Mm-hmm. So they've set up a web store. It's not real functional right now because nobody has the Chrome operating system yet.
Right.
But the Chrome operating system is coming. They actually are doing a pilot program, and you can even apply to get one of the pilot Chrome operating system netbooks if you
right.
want to try it out.
Reviews have not been great for that netbook, though. The trackpad is terrible, apparently. So it's really not meant for a retail environment. So it was more just to get this out there and really, the purpose is to feature the Chrome OS, which I've tried in the past. You can load it on a USB thumb drive and run it from there. You can run it in a virtual machine. There are different ways because it's an open source project, of course, so you can get the source code and get the executables and get it up and running. But you can experience the web store even if you don't have the Chrome OS, and that's really the feature. And I kind of like it. Now, a lot of people don't get it. I've been playing with it for the last few days, and it works nicely with the browser, and the idea here is that you can install apps within the browser, and it takes advantage of specific browser functions that maybe a regular website would not. So there's where a little bit of the confusion comes in. So you get things that are a little bit more integrated right into the web experience than just a regular old website. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think there is some potential here, and certainly the Google name and the Google war chest, you know, is behind this. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that goes and how it relates to Android, which is their mobile operating system. And I do believe it'll get some legs here as we move more and more to the cloud. You can use most of the Google tools, and I think some of our churches and schools are using a lot of those tools right now. And that really supports an environment that is cloud-based. So maybe the future, and maybe a little bit early, but we'll see. We'll watch with interest where this goes.
And I'll just have to include a link in the show notes to a fun video that Google put together to demonstrate the cloud-based capabilities.
Yep.
So
yep.
I don't know if you saw that video or not, Martin, but a guy's netbook continually gets destroyed in very creative ways, and he logs right back in.
Which is a little girl with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that gets that gets smashed on his laptop. So all to prove the point that it's really not the computing system itself, the hardware, it's all about the cloud. So take a look at that. Speaking of cloud, Sally, that's your tip or your pick of the week. You've got a Web 2.0 cloud-based application as your pick, which
I can't believe
we've never had a pick on the show before.
I was stunned when I researched, but my pick of the week is Picnic, PICNIK.com. Picnic is an online image editing website, and you can do so much at Picnic, and it is my go-to place. It's dead easy, really simple to get logged in, a really fun interface. You can use it for free, or you can get a premium account and expand your capabilities on the website. So it's for your simple editing things like cropping and resizing, maybe getting rid of red eye in an image, or even animals red eye version or whatever. But you can also get creative. You can add text, you can add little Santa caps right now. They have Christmas stuff that you can add, snow to your pictures or whatever, and be real creative with it. You can create photo collages where you put together several pictures in a layout, and then, like I said, add text or whatever. I have an example of one of those I can include in the show notes. And you can even do slideshows where it takes a group of your pictures, especially if you have a premium account, and creates a flash-based slideshow, and you can send people a link to it, or you can embed it on your own website or whatever. So just lots and lots of capabilities, and so much fun and so easy to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, I taught a couple of Final Web sessions this year, and this was one of the best things that I shared. If you were to poll the people that were in my class.
I found the same thing. It was kind of one of those light bulb moments. I said, wow, exactly. And kind of the, wow, this is cool. I wish I'd known about this last year, 2 years ago.
This is just what I needed kind of website. You know, I really wanted to be able to do this kind of thing.
My wife said
so
the same
easy.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and of course, they are connected to a lot of different social sharing websites. You can output your pictures directly to Flickr or Facebook or Twitter or whatever your choice is. They have lots of options.
By the way, owned by Google now, of course.
Yeah, that's right. So I really couldn't recommend it higher. Picnic.com, it's a great site. I have a premium account, and I use it regularly. Yeah,
probably worth it. What is it, like $20 a year?
I think it's more like $25.
Okay.
And won one. I did a photo thing and won a premium account, but when I came up for renewal, I had to pay the money because I was hooked.
But
it was worth it.
It really works well. And I had the same experience when I do my Final Web classes. This is really a winner. So, and there is a web app in Google Chrome. So you can launch that. And it really works well, really sturdy stuff. So good pick. And I cannot believe we've now at show, we're at show 162. And
we
had 161 times two other picks, that didn't include picnics.
We just assumed everybody knew the good stuff.
That's right. So I did not know that about the slideshow. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I am going to pick something that all of our Mac people probably will roll their eyes at because they've had this app for years. It's kind of the de facto FTP client on the Mac called CyberDuck. Funky name, but probably the FTP tool for Macs for years. When I was using a Mac, I used to have an iMac that I don't use any longer, but this was the tool that I used all the time for FTP work. File transfer protocol, so it's a tool that allows you to shuffle files around as if it were like a Windows Explorer. But CyberDuck now is available for Windows, and it's in beta, but it works really well. It's simple, it's fast, it'll import favorites from any other FTP clients like FileZilla, which is what I was using, which is very structured and stilted and I didn't think very user-friendly at all. CyberDuck interacts with all kinds of apps. It can be FTP, SFTP, SSH protocols, WebDAV. It will connect automatically with Google Docs, so it'll use that as your storage. So it's a really nice, clean interface. They've taken some nice things from their Mac software and now made it available on Windows. And it's version 4.0, public beta. It was just launched yesterday, in fact, and I grabbed it right away and loaded it up and did some testing with it. And really, really nice interface. It's quick, easy, which it just kind of stays out of your way. CyberDuck. It's at cyberduck.ch. If you want to download it, the cost is right. It is free, and give it a go. It's open source and works really, really well. So CyberDuck.
Sounds like a good find, Martin. I just want to backtrack a little and make sure that those who aren't familiar with FTP understand it's for moving files to other computers, basically. So not just around on your own computer, but typically to move files to a computer that's on the internet. So if you're working on a website or whatever and want to transfer files, then this would be a good tool to use.
It is faster than HTTP, so regular downloads from websites. So if they have an FTP site and you're moving large files or want to move large files, this is the best way to go. So those of you that are in need of this tool probably already know what it is. So FTP CyberDuck.
Very good.
We have a contest we need to talk about, Sally.
We do. We're wrapping up our contest with our final clue, and I know everyone is just waiting with bated breath.
This is it, the last one.
Where to find the QR code that's hidden in our archives. And the clue is the art of productivity. So see if that leads you to that fifth QR code. Decipher it, and you will have identified the mystery solution that we're looking for. And we have a form out on the web for you to submit that mystery solution to us. You can find it at bit.ly/WellsTech contest. And once you submit the mystery solution, then all those submissions will go into a hopper, and we'll pick out a winner on our next podcast. So you do need to get your submissions in by midnight on Monday, December 20th. And I said midnight. It's really 11:59 p.m.
December 20th, right?
On Monday, December 20th. And we'll make that pick and announce it on our next podcast.
And that was bit.ly, bit.ly/WellsTech contest. And you, too, could be a lucky winner of, as Ryan Rosenthal could attest, of a Cafe Press gift certificate.
Right. We didn't even say that. $25 to spend at the Cafe Press store.
All right, let's move on to community feedback, Sally.
Boy, we've got lots to squeeze in here, Martin. It's exciting to see all this feedback. First up, we want to follow up on a listserv question that I put out asking about web streaming recommendations. I had a question from Pastor James Douglas looking for ad-free web streaming. And that's kind of a difficult topic because we didn't get a lot of responses. I don't think many people are doing that yet. You can web stream with a lot of different services like Ustream.tv, but they impose their own advertising on your live video stream. And so I did a little research. You can get ad-free with Ustream for $99 a month. I saw another easy live stream promo come across, and theirs was $150 a month for advertisement-free live streaming. So carries a bit of a hefty price tag, and if there's anybody out there that's listening that knows of a better solution, we'd be happy to promote it here.
Now, is that the thing that struck me as I was watching this conversation is if you embed the video, do you still get the ads? I thought in some cases, if you like embed a YouTube or a Ustream stream, that you didn't get hit with the ads at that point.
You do. We embedded on our website at St. John's and Sleepy Eye.
Okay.
And it used to be that the ads would pop up at the bottom, the text-based ads at the bottom of the video stream, and there was an X, and you could make them collapse back down. But now they're actually, in addition to that, starting the live video stream with a video advertisement. And one I saw was not real appropriate to be attached to our worship service, but
that's even
we don't have any control over what videos they're showing at the beginning of the stream. They used to not do the video advertising, but now they are. So
that's a bummer.
If
any of our listeners know of a solution here that is either cheaper or free, that is ad free, let us know. We'd love to share that with our listeners.
Okay. Next up, we have some DIGO links to share. First from Jason Schmidt, who's from Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. And he shared a couple. Well, actually, he probably shared more than this, but these are the ones I picked up on. One is for Go Animate for Schools, which is a website where teachers can register and get up to 100 accounts for free so their kids can create animations online. Another is I think it's a blog post. I'm trying to bring it up. It's called Coaching In and Out of the Classroom. That's the name of the blog. And this particular post is called Sixth Graders and Voki, V-O-K-I. And V-O-K-I is a talking avatar that you can create. So you create this little image, whatever you want it to look like, and then you give it text to say, and it will it will say whatever you want it to say. So I thought this was really a good example because he had his students talk about literary connections. So they're reading a particular book, and then they talked about how that book made a connection in their mind, maybe to an event in their own lives or whatever. So a really good example of how sixth graders used Voki, not just pointing you to the tool, but actually showing you a real life usage of it. So check that out if you're interested in adding Voki to your classroom.
Very good.
And then the last link I wanted to share from Jason is to a website called The 21 Things. And the subtitle is 21 Things for the 21st Century Educator, Technology Every Educator Should Know. And it's organized down the right-hand column into categories, things like communication tools or copyright and creative commons or evaluation and assessment. And they have 21 of these categories. And then as you dig into each of those, they tell you about tools and things that you can use in your classroom for each of these categories. And they tie it all to the NETS standards for teachers, which is the National Educational Technology Standards for Teachers. So an excellent website, and I'm sure many teachers would benefit from checking out the 21 things.
Very good. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. And then I tagged a bunch of stuff, and I'll go through these real quickly because in my reading I come across things that are of interest, I think, to both churches and schools. One of them was that there's a little how-to on how to get your church's podcast on Roku for free. Roku is a box, a set-top box that you can hook up to your TV, which will stream the internet or content on the internet, including Netflix, Hulu, those kinds of things, podcasts included. And there's a little service there that you can upload your audio or video sermons to a service that will actually make it available if you know the address, and you can search on the Roku box and allow people to view your content. So that was just a helpful tip there. It's very easy to do. Second was a series of and I don't know if you looked at this, Sally, but a series of pieces of art. So what a guy by the name of Jim LePage did was he created what's called Word Bible Designs. And he's got a piece of art that he's, and these are all digitally, I think, created for every book of the Bible. Very interesting. He takes a concept of that Bible, a theme maybe, and then turns it into a piece of art. There are some edgy ones here, just so that you're aware, but most of them are family friendly, and you can actually purchase prints of these or use the concepts in all kinds of different ways. So I was really impressed with this, Sally. Did you get a chance to look at these?
I did. I got addicted. I looked through all of the books. He started last January,
yep,
this past January, and he's made it through the Old Testament so far.
That's
so
right.
It looks like
that's
he's taking a little
no
break,
New Testament,
and
right,
he'll start the New Testament soon. But just really impressive. He's a graphic designer, and he does an excellent job with the work he's done there. And another example of, I would assume, a lay person, you know, using the web to spread God's word and, you know, in his own unique way.
Yep, yep. Nicely done, too. These are quality. So next thing that I found that I wanted to share is just a couple of tips. One is an article called Why Users Fill Out Forms Faster with Top-Aligned Labels. So usually when you're creating a form, I know this is the case on Final Web, you can make a decision whether the label of the input box that you're creating, so first name, last name, those kinds of things, appears above the box or beside the box. So here's some scientific studies that suggest that labels above the box seem to allow the user to fill out the form a little bit faster than left-aligned labels. So top-aligned labels apparently are the way to go. So there's an article on that. The last ones are, I think, interesting as well. One called Teachers as Makers, and there's a whole article here how a participant, Dale Doherty, and I don't know Dale from anybody else, but he writes for O'Reilly Radar, and he attended a workshop in Orlando organized by the National Writing Project to introduce teachers to making, and there's a collaboration or a partnership with Make Magazine, which is really a scientific magazine about how to make stuff. Those teachers that are in, you know, kind of in the science area especially, would be interested in Make Magazine. But the whole concept here is to introduce writing to making. And the point is to help kids understand the fact that there is a need for technical writing or technical writers. And that's, Sally, something that you are familiar with, the ability to write good, clear, clean documentation for something that you've done, whether that be a website or, in this case, a project, a science project of some sort, where you're documenting in a very clear, concise way the project. So there's real good application here to science fairs, for instance. So you've actually created it, and you always need to write up a little bit of an article about how you did what you did. So very good article that I think teachers would be interested in here.
And then one last one, I think I'd have to call this one a tie because you and Jason Schmidt
found the same article.
Tagged this. And if I had found it first, I would have tagged it too. It's a brand new site. I don't know if it was just announced yesterday, I believe, and it's from Google. Uh-huh. And it's called Send Your Parents a Tech Support Care Package. And it allows you to kind of fill in the blanks, almost like a Mad Lib or something,
yep.
And send these excellent short, concise videos that Google's put together on simple computer concepts, not just web concepts, but things like copy and paste and changing your wallpaper on a PC or
make text
changing
bigger,
your
smaller,
screensaver,
yep.
Or you know, finding information, search tips, resizing a picture, working with video files, whatever it is, just real simple, straightforward videos that they've put together. And I filled it out. I sent myself an email to see what it looked like, and it looks just like it shows on the screen. You say, "Hi, Mom, I'm really shocked that you've been using your computer these days. Here's a video to help you. I hope that you find these videos will make you more self-sufficient.
Yep.
Good luck." You know, so, and they come across just that way. And I responded to it. And as a mom, you can say, "Thanks for sending this. I'm a computer ninja now." And it's just really cute. Well done, kind of tongue in cheek, but yep. Excellent videos. And I think
and
any would benefit.
Timely, because this is the time where we do meet with our parents, for our grandparents or other relatives for whom we are sometimes tech support. So this is just a nice little fun way to help them along a little bit.
And we'll include a link to the complete list of videos. Even if you don't want to fill out the cute form, you can get to all the videos and be able to put them in your arsenal as you're trying to do support for various people. So
yeah. Nice.
Well
cool.
Done.
Thanks.
Okay, we must be approaching a world record length of this show, but we still have more
too
feedback.
Too much stuff. This is a Christmas bonus for y'all.
Yes, it is. Some Twitter tweets to share from Marin McPeak, who's at St. Mark's in Citrus Heights, California. They've dedicated a page on their website to Advent Ponderings for Women. I thought this was a great idea.
Nice.
She's using information from the Wells Women's Ministry Committee and a series of Advent devotion material, and she's releasing it one per day on the website. So check out that link, and perhaps it'll give you some Advent pondering material or give you an idea for your own website.
Nice. Thanks,
well
Marin.
Done, Marin.
Yeah.
Gail Potratz from Emmanuel in New London shared a couple of links for upcoming conferences. One is the 2011 online conference on 21st century Lutheran education, and that's going to be February 24th and 25th, and the name escapes me, but Bernard Bull, I believe,
yep.
Who's at Concordia Mequon, is behind this conference, and Gail recommended that. And also coming up next summer is the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference, something Gail's been involved in for several years now. They're going to be meeting at the Milwaukee Art Museum July 26th through 29th, and they are accepting registrations. So check those out if you're interested.
Very good.
We heard from Pastor Phil Huebner, who's at Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida, and he sent us an interesting link. His comment was that this is a great page for pastors and Christians to read, great faith implications. And the link is to a page on Inc.com about cold calling. So it's kind of written from the salesman's perspective, mm-hmm. about getting your message out there and how to cold call and improve those skills. And I thought it was really interesting that Phil then made the connection to reaching out with the gospel message, and probably some good lessons to be learned here. So thanks for sharing that, Phil. Next up, we heard from Perry Lunn, who is at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa, and he reminded us of OneLicense.com's podcasting.
OneLicense.net.
I'm sorry, yes, onelicense.net, podcasting license, where if you have a regular annual license with onelicense.net to cover your music copyright issues, you can expand that license to include live stream recordings of the music performance. So like recording your worship service and being able to podcast the entire service if it is music that's covered under your onelicense.net license.
Yep.
So check out that link. Thanks for the reminder about that. Hopefully we have that out on our copyright page on those.
That is, yeah, and we've referenced that, and that's a great tool. It's half the price of your regular license, so it's a bolt-on. So you have to have your regular license, and then it's 50% of that. Along with that, Sally, I ran across a blog post actually today talking about a poll, some poll results from copyrights questions that were posed to churches. This was on churchmarketingsucks.com, which has got a funny name, but they've got some real relevant articles. And let me just read it real quick at the risk of actually extending this podcast even further. Sometimes you just need a little break from all that caroling and Honey Baked Ham and Christmas Joy, so we decided to focus on everyone's favorite Grinch this week, copyright issues. We asked in last week's poll if your church has ever found yourself on either side of a copyright issue. Here are your responses. The biggest chunk of you, 58%, are thanking Jesus, Santa Claus, and anyone else you can find because you ought to have been busted for violating copyrights, but you haven't been. But hey, what's the New Year's resolution? That's what New Year's resolutions are for, right? 2011 could be the year you put copyright risk behind you. Another 36% of you folks who responded are doing a great job keeping a clear copyright conscience and aren't expecting any cease and desist letters in your stocking in a couple of weeks. After that, there are just a handful of stragglers. 3% of you have had charges brought before against you before, and another 3% of you think it all belongs to God, so it's no big deal if you borrow it. We hope both of you are up for changing your ways in the coming year. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Very interesting poll. All right. Moving on, just a couple of more things. We heard from Pastor Phil Henslin, who's at New Life in Rockford, Illinois. And he pointed out to us that our Google Christian Worship lectionary calendar was missing one entry for Easter 3, which is May 8th. And we got that fixed, and we thought it was a great opportunity to just remind our listeners about that Google calendar. We have a page on our wiki dedicated to it, so it explains how to use it, how to incorporate it into your own Google calendar, and it basically has all the lectionary information for this church year, Church Year A. So, and it even includes the supplemental readings and things, so check that out.
Sounds like Phil is planning ahead.
Yeah, good for him. And lastly, we just wanted to mention that we heard from Mike Westendorf, who's one of our Wells artists, and he has a new CD out, and currently it's available through Indie Heaven. And we'll include a link to that in the show notes. He also said he's working on a Christmas CD potentially for next year. Mm-hmm. So lots of good stuff from Mike.
Very good. And that should do it for our community feedback.
I think we're done, yep.
And I feel a little bit better about the length of this show, Sally, because next week is an abbreviated Wells Tech podcast. We just have an interview, and we're going to announce our contest winner. We had the opportunity to get Professor Rich Gergel from the seminary on the line, and we talked about the new continuing education program that he is working diligently on. He's cleared some time, or he has had some time cleared on his teaching schedule to work on the continuing education program from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, primarily for pastors, but all call workers is the charge. So we're going to be talking with him next week, and then we will reveal the contest winner. So make sure you get your contest entries in. So it'll be a shorter show next week on Christmas week. So again, I feel a little bit better about the length of this one.
Those contest entries, we should remind them quick, Martin. bit.ly/WellsTech contest.
Very good. So sign up soon. You can only enter once.
That's right. We
know who you are. Let's close the show with the music, the Advent music of Michael Schrader, The Reason for the Season, from his album of the same name. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
As I walk on a winter's night, the snow is falling down. There's decorated Christmas lights on every street in town. At the mall, all the signs say sale. There's trees and mistletoe. And for a moment I forget that all the world should know that the reason for the season, it isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths or stockings, or trees or candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season is that God so loved, He came His one and only Son so that I'd be saved. As I walk past some office lights, there's parties all around. We celebrate, yet miss the point of what it's all about. And I think, how could I forget, with all the sins I've sown, this baby child's the greatest gift this world has ever known. That's the reason for the season. It isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths, the stockings, the trees, the candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season is that God so loved, He gave His one and only Son so that I'd be saved. The Christ in Christmas everywhere I go. That's the reason for the season. It isn't lights or gifts we gain. It isn't Santa wreaths or stockings, or trees or candy canes. Oh, the reason for the season is that God so loved, He gave one and only Son so that I'd be saved. But it's one and only Son so that I'd be saved.